Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Va'etchanan. This week, Rabbi Alex Israel discusses the Shema in Parsha Va'etchanan. Rabbi Alex Israel is a member of the Pardes faculty. And now, Rabbi Alex Israel.
Thank you, Larry. This week's Parsha, this week's Torah reading, Va'etchanan, contains so many quite amazing highlights, it's difficult to know what to choose. On the one hand, we have the famous Ten Commandments, which are repeated here. Their first instance was in the book of Exodus, now in the book of Devarim, Deuteronomy. They appear again. And several other famous passages. However, we're going to focus on another tremendously famous line, a line which we know as the Shema. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Hear, O Israel, Hashem is our God, Hashem is one, or Hashem the one and only. And this has become almost like a mantra of Jewish faith. In the halachic literature, Shema is an act which we consider to be Kabbalat Ol Malchut Shamayim. It is the means whereby a Jew on a daily basis accepts upon himself the yoke of the kingdom of heaven, or if I put it in more colloquial language, it's the way, it's our daily pledge of allegiance, it's our daily statement which expresses that Hashem, God, the Almighty, is indeed sovereign over our lives. And by pronouncing this every day, the Jew who does pronounce it every day expresses the fact that he is dedicating his lifestyle, his actions, to living a way which is guided by God. We probably from a very young age know this very famous Jewish line, and in fact the halacha says it's one of the first verses that a parent should teach their child. Traditionally, it also is the ultimate statement that a Jew will make, the final statement that a Jew will make on his deathbed. And yet I would argue that many of us haven't given too much thought to this line and what exactly it means. Because of course, it's a problematic, its grammar is very, very strange. Let me try and explain. Shema Yisrael, hear, O Israel. Who's talking to who? In other words, when I make this pronouncement every single day, hear, O Israel, what am I saying by saying that? Let's continue. Hear, O Israel. Somebody's calling somebody, but we've said that. Hashem Elokeinu. Hashem Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh. The tetragrammaton, the name of God, is our God. Hashem is our God. Hashem is one. Why don't we say, Hashem is the God, like we say on Yom Kippur. Hashem hu Elohim, Adonai hu ha-Elohim. Hashem is the God. Why do we say Hashem is our God? And when we say God is one, what does that mean? What does it mean that God is one? And if God were five, would that make a difference? And why do we repeat the name of God? Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Couldn't we say Hashem Elohim Echad? Hashem, who is the God, is one. Why do we say Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad? Sounds poetic, but what exactly does it mean? So we have a great number of questions in the way that this sentence is formulated. And I'd like to present a few different approaches which are suggested by the classic authorities or classic commentaries. The first approach is that of Rashi. So we always like to start with Rashi. Fascinatingly, Rashi reads this idea, or reads this verse, as a historical statement. Let me try and explain. Rashi says, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu. Why does it say Hashem, our God? And he says, Hashem, who is our God at the present time, and he is not at the moment the God of the Gentile nations, he will, at a future time, be Hashem Echad. He will be one God, in other words, the universal God. As it states, and he quotes from Tzfanya, then I will transform all the nations to a single speech that they will all call out in the name of God. Or as it says in Zechariah, Bayom Ahu Yeh Hashem Echad Ushmo Echad. On that day, God will be one and his name will be one. What does it mean when we say God will be one and his name will be one? He will be universally acclaimed. Rashi has done a remarkable twist in his reading of this verse. Let's again think what he's saying. He's saying, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Eloheinu. Hashem is our God now. Our God. Why does it say our God and not Hashem Elohim? Because at the moment, at the time when Moses is reciting this statement as the Israelites stand poised to enter into the promised land, who recognizes the notion of monotheism? It is only the Jewish people. The rest of the nations are polytheists, the rest of the nations are pagans. And therefore, this turns into a historical statement and a hope for the future. Listen, Israel, at the moment, Hashem is our God, only ours. We're the only ones who recognize him. The rest of the nations of the world do not. But in the future, in some future time, Hashem Echad. Don't worry, Hashem will be universally acclaimed. Everybody will turn towards monotheism. Everybody will turn towards a situation in which they recognize God as the true power in the world. Now, this is an elegant reading because it explains, possibly, why we use the phrase Elokeinu, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem is our God. And it also explains why we say the tetragrammaton Hashem twice in the verse. Because we're saying Hashem at the moment is ours, Hashem will be in the future recognized by everybody. And so, in this case, in Rashi's reading, Shema is not so much religious instruction, but rather a belief in the future. A testimony to an era of redemption and universal truth. And Shema then is saying that at the current time, the Jewish people stand apart in an imperfect world. However, there will be an era in which God will be evident to all. That's the first reading, a surprising historical reading from Rashi. Maybe a more standard reading is that of the Rashbam, Rashi's grandson. This is what he has to say. When he says Hashem Elokeinu, he says the following. Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem alone is our God. We have no other God in conjunction with him. If I quote from the Rashbam in the Hebrew, it reads in the following way. Hashem hu levado Elokeinu, ve'ein lo Eloha acher imo. In other words, Hashem Elokeinu means God alone. Hashem alone is our power. And there is no other power with him. And he quotes from the book of Chronicles, where the verse there says, and we hear one of the Judean kings say, we have Hashem our God and we've not forsaken him, because we don't have any intermediaries between us and God. And what is Hashem Echad according to the Rashbam? Lo levado na'avod v'lo netzaref imo Eloah acher. It almost seems like this is what he's saying. We only have one address, Hashem Elokeinu. Hashem alone is our God. And even in his service, we serve God in purity. We will serve him and we will not adjoin any other deity, even to engage in divination, liksom ksamim, or anything else. I think this is probably seen as the most standard reading of the Shema, in that the Shema, frequently you will find people translating various sidurim, translating Hashem Echad, it mean God alone. God is one and the only God. Okay, one and only. I've seen this in various different sidurim. For the Rashbam, God is our exclusive deity. God alone is to be worshipped. And his proof text is fascinating. When the Rashbam quotes from the book of Chronicles, he refers to verses that talk about Jeroboam. And the amazing thing was that Jeroboam set up a temple to God. But in that temple, he introduced very, very unusual modes of worship. Amongst them, there was a golden calf in each of his temples. The northern kingdom didn't abandon God as their deity, but they introduced some sort of accessories, physical forms, which were meant to somehow represent God. So when Jeroboam is criticized for making the calves as gods, it's not the fact that he thinks there is more than one God, but he's sort of using some sort of intermediary or some sort of what we call syncretic worship in order to access Hashem. The Rashbam then is about the purity of worship. Not only is God one, but he must be worshipped without any intermediaries, without any accessories. It is for this reason, for example, that the Rambam, Maimonides, says that we have to be very careful to pray to God and not to pray via anything else. So much so that he says you cannot pray to an angel. You can't ask the angels to intercede with God. You have to talk to God and God alone. And I'll give you one practical application of that, which is that some people, when they say Shalom Aleichem, Shalom Aleichem Malachei HaSharet, the famous song Shalom Aleichem on a Friday night, there is the line, Baruchuni L'Shalom. We say to the angels, bless us with peace. And it is famously known that the Vilna Gaon would not say that. He said, we only pray to God. We don't pray to angels. We don't ask angels for blessings. We only ask God for a blessing. Back to the Rashbam, we follow one God and one God only, without any intermediary. For the Rashbam, Rashi was a historical explanation. The Rashbam is a philosophical explanation which talks about the singular nature of divine service and the fact that God alone. But I would like to give a third approach, and this is the approach of the Malbim. The Malbim relates to the fact that we use two names of God. Maybe classically known, there's the word, name Elohim and the name Hashem, Yud-Heh Vav-Heh. And here we say, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. We could just say, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Echad. That's it. That would fit with the Rashbam. That would work very well. Hear, O Israel, God is one. Why do we need to say, Hashem, Yud-Heh Vav-Heh, Eloheinu, is our God? So, let's say a few things about these two different names of God. Traditionally, the name Elokim represents the harsh, rule-based aspect of God, what we call Midat HaDin, the attribute of judgment. Yud-Heh Vav-Heh signifies a more worldly, sensitive, merciful feature of God, and we call Yud-Heh Vav-Heh the Midat HaRachamim. Elohim is seen as more detached. In fact, Elohim, the word El, actually means, in the Bible, it means power. And therefore, other gods can be seen as Elohim Acherim, simply other powers. We can say, Mi chamocha ba'elim Hashem, who is like you amongst the powers. El just means power. Forces of nature. When we say that our God is Elohim, we mean God is the sum of all the powers. Plural, Elohim, the sum of all the powers. In other words, God is the ultimate force of the world. But Elohim in that regard is a detached, almost emotionless, rule-based God. Just like nature has its rules and nature works indiscriminately, so Midat HaDin, when we talk about Elohim, God as Elohim, it is significant. It signifies authority. It signifies detachment, transcendence. The word Yud-Heh Vav-Heh, referring to God, is sometimes referred to as Hayah Hoveh V'Yihyeh. God is the past, he is the present, he is the future. God is engaged with the world. And frequently, Yud-Heh Vav-Heh represents a certain connection, a certain human-centric focus of God, what we call the attribute of mercy. The Malbim relates in this regard to Shema as relating to these two aspects of God. And let me try and... I'll read a few lines from the Malbim and he'll explain. You know, before I get to the Malbim, let me give another introduction. When we talk about the world of polytheism, when we talk about people who are not monotheists, the root of all polytheism, many will argue, is a theology that we know as dualism. It's the fundamental layer of all polytheism. Pagan theology frequently see gods as simply forces of nature, the god of the wind, the rain. But forces of nature can sometimes clash. In classic theology of polytheism, there is always a good god and a bad god. Let's try and explain. Imagine a farmer in the ancient Near East. Let's say it was a good year agriculturally. So if it's a good year agriculturally, then the gods must be favoring me. They must like me. But let's say that yesterday my prize cow died. So God is angry with me. Why did my cow die? How can both be true? Is God happy with me or angry with me? So the explanation is like this. There are in fact two gods, two addresses. There's a God of good and a God of bad. A God of tov v'ra. And these two gods, these are opposing forces. And each force which oppose one another govern human existence. Just to understand, of course, there were more sophisticated systems, the god of war, the fire god, the rain god, the sea god, and what have you. But the dual division is at the basis of the polytheistic mindset. And the force of good gives me the good things in life. The force of evil punishes and precipitates disaster and misfortune. And naturally, at a certain point, one begins to characterize these forces of good and bad. A word about monotheism. Of course, in monotheism, we only have one force, Hashem Echad. The polytheists, by the way, had an easy time dealing with the question of why bad things happen to good people. Bad things happen to good people because there is a bad God. And one of the reasons why we talk about polytheism as problematic is because, of course, if I have to appease the good God and the bad God, I have two conflicting systems of how to work the gods, and I spend my time trying to appease the gods, or since the gods are contradictory, there is no system I can internalize. Monotheism is, we talk about ethical monotheism, because we have one God, and that God does good and bad, and he has rules, and we can follow his rules, and therefore we develop one moral system. But the one thing that monotheism cannot explain is tzadik v'ra lo, why do bad things happen to good people? Because we don't say there's a good force and a bad force. We say God is the source of goodness and bad. Back to the Shema. Of course, if you have a good force and a bad force, what do you tend to do? You love the God of good and you fear the God of evil, right? One fears the bad God and you love the force of good. Now back to the Shema. The Malbim notes that in the lines before the Shema, we talk about fear of God. In the lines after Shema, we talk about love of God. Let me elaborate. Chapter 6, verse 2, Leman tirayat Hashem Elokecha, so that you fear God. The line immediately after the Shema, V'ahavta Hashem Elokecha, love God. Since we have a concept of fearing God and loving God, we might think there is a God which you love, the God of good, and a God which you fear, the God of bad. And this is what the Malbim says. All ancient societies believed in polytheism. A common factor between them all was that they had a God of good acts and a God of bad events. They could not conceive that the good and bad in the world could emerge from a single source. Hence they feared the bad God and loved the good God. After he, Moses, had stated that the objective of the mitzvot is fear of God, he now comes to raise them to a high level of love of God. But he says, as the Torah comes to teach the unification of fear and love to the true God, it needs to precede a principle, which is the belief in the unity. That God of the world is one, there is none besides him, that he is the source of all existence in the world. And therefore he says, what are we saying? Shema Israel, listen Israel, Hashem Elokeinu, the God of mercy is the same God of justice. Hashem Echad, why Hashem Echad? Because ultimately, the one God is ultimately merciful. So we've seen three approaches. One is historical, and two are philosophical. The truth is that the Rashbam deals with more with the worship of God. Don't worship God with any accessories. But the Malbim talks about the essence of God. Ironically, even though there is a single God, one God, he is the source of good and bad. He is the object of love and fear. That single one God is a very complex hybrid. And yet, it is one God. It is one God with one address and one ethical system. When we look at these philosophies, we might understand that when we look at the world, sometimes we look at God as the master of order, in which all the events of the world have a planned and organized mechanism where life follows a correct pattern. This is the experience of the God of justice, Midat Hadin, a God of truth and order. But there are sometimes times when life does not go according to plan. Sometimes we experience hardship in the world. And even then we understand that God has a place. God supports us. He challenges us and tests us, but it is the same God. In other words, sometimes we experience the world as an organized place, a place of justice, but there are other times when God is more distant and elusive. It could well be that Shema is really reminding us that God is one, that sometimes the world is bewildering, but there is a force behind God. And here is where I return back to Rashi. When Rashi reads the Shema, he doesn't read it as a statement, as a theological confession. Rashi reads the Shema as a prayer, almost as if to say, God can be manifest as master of order, and God can also be manifest as master of chaos. And therefore, in the world that we live in now, sometimes we are the only ones who profess God is one, but we hope that Bayomahu Yeh Hashem Echad Ushmo Echad. We hope that there will be a day when God's oneness, his order, will be coherent to the entire universe, and that we can perceive God's oneness, God's truth, God's mercy, God's justice, all at the same time. And maybe in that way, Shema reads not just as a theological statement, but rather as a prayer. Thank you very much. Wishing everybody a Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Israel. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.